Welcome to the HealthLinks podcast, presented by the HealthLinks family of services. I'm your host, DJ Thatcher. Our mission here is to engage in conversations about the health and medical landscape of South Carolina so we're all better informed. In this episode, we're on beautiful Sullivan's Island, right by the beach, in the primary care office of Dr. Kay Durst, who is a board-certified family physician and also the president of the Charleston County Medical Society. So, Dr. Durst, welcome to the HealthLinks podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's such an honor and privilege to be here.
Well, now, we could spend a whole episode talking about primary care, obviously, but our focus here is really about the Charleston County Medical Society. And, you know, our audience is a mix of medical people and, of course, the lay public. And I bet a lot of the lay public doesn't even know that there is such a thing as a medical society. But even within the medical community, a lot of physicians and other practitioners may not be aware of what the society does. So tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes. Well, the society has been around for a long time. The Charleston Medical Society was actually started back in, I think it was 1749 or in the 1700s. And it was around for many years. And back in 1951, the society kind of broke off into the Medical Society of South Carolina. And then we have the Charleston Medical Society. And that is because the society in and of itself was working with helping run Roper Hospital. And the society decided to break off in 1951 because they needed more of the other society to run the operations of the hospital. So the Charleston Medical Society started in 1951, so it's been around for several decades, working on some of the missions to bring physicians together to serve the community, working with different service projects, and it's such an exciting group. It's made up of physicians throughout our Charleston Lowcountry area. It doesn't matter what specialty you're in. It doesn't matter what hospital affiliation you're in. We have residents involved. We have medical students, and it's a great organization. I'm so proud to be a part of it.
Terrific. Now, of course, this is the Charleston County Medical Society. We'll have viewers and listeners from throughout the state. Do most counties throughout South Carolina have their own medical society?
Yes, they do. Of course, the bigger cities, Charleston and Columbia and Greenville and Spartanburg, have more robust societies. Some of the rural communities kind of merge with the other counties, but we have part of that. And the Charleston Medical Society then is kind of, or these other counties are a subsidiary of the South Carolina Medical Association.
Okay. So for the, I want to say average, but for the typical physician, what are some of the benefits they get from being a member of the society?
Yeah. Well, one, we work on different fellowship kind of activities, so support. Right now, we're working a lot with physician wellness since, unfortunately, burnout with physicians and medical students and healthcare providers are pretty strong. So our focus is kind of on that. So you have that. We also have different committees. So maybe a physician is interested in health and education. We have the Health and School Wellness Committee that they could get involved with. As I mentioned earlier, we have different service projects that they can get involved with. You have the benefit of that. There's also the advocacy that we have to help promote different, maybe different community groups that we're trying to help with. Let's say environment and health is a big one that we do. And other things that are out there, especially during different pandemics and things like that.
You mentioned the burnout factor. We know there's a huge need for every type of healthcare provider, whether it's physicians, nurses, technicians, and so forth. Are we seeing much of a shortage in this area with physicians? And then maybe compare that to other areas of the state. I'm not sure what you might know
about
that.
Yes. I mean, just in general, for especially primary care physicians and family medicine doctors, which is what I am, there's a very big need throughout the actually the United States, and even in our own area, even though we're more populated. Some is because just more people in the area. Some is that trying to get the healthcare doctors to go into this specialty. It used to be like your old country doctor that you would have. Unfortunately, too, there is a big shortage in the OBGYN doctors, especially in the belt that we call, you know, up and down 95 in the rural areas. So there's definitely a need of that. And there are different ways that we're trying to promote to bring the physicians physicians in the area. And for primary care, we're kind of like the gatekeepers. We help. A lot of people say that we're kind of like a quarterbacks a little bit, like you have a problem. Maybe it's a vascular, then I'll send you the vascular doctor. We do a lot of prevention, help against different cancers, work on different lifestyle things, help lose weight, help you prevent diabetes, prevent heart attacks. So it's a big thing that we work with the specialty, or the specialists in the area.
Sure. So Dr. Durst, you mentioned that 95 corridor and of course the rural areas that we have in South Carolina. We're blessed in the metro areas with fabulous health care, right. But there is this disparity. I know one of the big missions of the County Medical Society is this committee you have to address health disparities. What type of disparities are there, though, that you're addressing?
Yes. Thank you so much for asking about that, because that is one of our biggest missions. We actually work with, within our medical society, one of the committees that we have is, or a collaboration is with Closing the Gap in Healthcare that is run by Dr. Thaddeus Bell. He had started this many years ago. He's on our board at the Charleston Medical Society, and he really knew in his own personal experience as a minority in medicine that there was a big disparity. And so with the STEM projects, they look at different, trying to get different minorities into the healthcare, either physicians, dental school, any type of nursing, anything like that. So Dr. Thaddeus Bell, the Closing the Gap, he does a lot of different podcasts. He does radio talks to try to get out in the community and help realizing there might be a cultural difference with the disparities in healthcare. Sometimes because different minority or racial groups do not see that there is maybe someone like them that is a physician that they can relate to. So he wants to make sure that they're heard and gets out there. Right now, his mission is looking to help with prostate cancer and helping, especially in the African American community. It's very prevalent. So he's working to get the word out. So don't be scared to go to the doctor and for them to be treated well. Looking also, you talked about the 95 corridor. This is a big thing, looking at disparities in healthcare with women that are pregnant. Unfortunately, even in this day, we have more African American women die at childbirth and in labor than we ever have, which is very sad. So we are working with Dr. Bell and the local society, the National Society, to help with these disparities in healthcare. The Closing the Gap in the healthcare also promotes a Low Country Jazz Festival, which we'd love for people to come. It's a wonderful thing. It's usually in Labor Day in the fall. And it's a great 3-day weekend where the money that is raised for that goes to the mission of closing the healthcare, along with the collaboration of the Charleston Medical Society. The money that's from that, also with Dr. Thaddeus Bell, we give as scholarships to help those in the minorities that are at school at Medical University of South Carolina. And these are wonderful scholarships to help the people get through the school, which, as we know, that education can cost a lot.
Well, there's been a lot of talk in the media, in the medical community about, and a push maybe I should say, to have healthcare providers that, quote, look like me. And that you get better outcomes when you have a provider that has your background, whether that be racial or cultural, gender, whatever. Mm-hmm. Are there studies that have shown that is real, or is that something that's just a good feeling? I don't know. Yeah. Just curious.
That's a great question. There actually are a lot of studies looking through the medical association. They've done some studies. I know there's some recent studies looking at even female surgeons and male surgeons, looking at that, also different minorities. I don't have the quotes right off of me, but there are definitely studies looking into that.
Interesting. There are lots of controversies in the world and also in the medical world, of course. Recently here in South Carolina, the state Senate just passed a medical marijuana bill that's been, I think, bounced back to the state House of Representatives. But does the County Medical Society take a position on that, or do they provide expert testimony to these legislators who may not be medical people? Just curious how that might work.
Yes. There are a lot of controversies in different bills. The Charleston Medical Society in of itself doesn't necessarily promote different stances on that for political reasons. However, if we do feel that something is important for the medical community, we do have people that have gone either within our Charleston Medical Society up to the State House. And I myself have met with several legislators just to help understand maybe questions about what's going on. We also just talk about some of our training, what's going on with the physicians. And we do have a big advocacy group. Of course, also not even our society, but more the South Carolina Medical Association. They really have different physicians that go and testify to promote within reason and within evidence for different causes. I know several people have worked for different causes with our Charleston Medical Society. We did help get some bills passed with looking at sunscreen for for kids in school to help prevent cancer. So those are some of the things that we have done.
Good. You mentioned before about the fact that we have medical students and residents who are part of the society. Do you find a big advantage when you're onboarding those newer physicians early in their career? They stay with you and they're more involved, or what are we seeing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we love having the medical students and the residents. It's just so great because they're fresh. They want to get out there, especially the ones that are there now. They really know how to work the computers and the phones and do some advocacy. And they have a lot of friends in different, maybe in computer science, and they know how to work with the EMRs. And it's enthusiastic to be with them. I think one thing that's very important, or two things. One is actually giving them the support. As I mentioned earlier about physician wellness, it's not just physicians, but it's, as we know, mental health is very important. So being able to help with those medical students and the residents to give them a mentor is important. And they have been studies to show is that mentorship goes along their training, they succeed more and they have a better outcome. So I think that's important. And then the other thing is just to have them involved and be a part of the society, the community. And we've been able to do different things to help them, even with financing with the school, then also teaching them about advocacy, how important it is, and realizing, especially work with the insurance companies and billing and cost of medicine, how they can have a voice to help their patients or maybe their families. So it's an exciting time. Wow. And a lot of them leave and then come back and stay with the society and stay in the community and involved in different organizations. Maybe the Red Cross, maybe, like I mentioned, are closing the gap in healthcare. So they want to give back to the community.
That's great. We mentioned earlier, a lot of people may not be aware of the county medical societies, but almost everyone has heard of the American Medical Association, or the AMA. And number one, is there a relationship between the two, or what is that relationship, if there is one?
Yes. So the American Medical Association has been around for many years, and there is a relationship. They're kind of the, I would guess, a parent of our subsidy, or we're a subsidy of them, but we are a little different. We're not just totally with them. The American Medical Association has done a lot to help physicians throughout the United States or patients, especially with different legislation. Like right now, they went and helped make it easier for your physicians to work with prior authorizations, which I know a lot of patients and doctors are familiar with, in getting different procedures done, or CT scans, or even medicine. So something that is, you know, good that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the AMA has done a lot of good. Certainly the county medical societies have as well. There seems to be, especially in recent years, this sort of a fracture within the AMA. A lot of physicians are not members, whether it's politics or positions or anything else. Have you seen that? And has that filtered down to the local level, or what?
Yes, it definitely has. I think some of it also is 2 years ago, going through the American Medical Association or local academies or national academies, you did have to go to a conference to kind of see what's going on. As time has gone on, especially with computers, you can get a lot of the information for physicians can without having to be there present. But then there's different advocacy groups. I think also a big shift in medicine that we kind of let insurance companies kind of do stuff. And then over the years, we've realized a lot of private equity firms have bought hospital groups, and a lot of the insurances are more dictating what the physicians and the patients are doing. Whereas before, there were a lot more physicians in private practice, so it was a little bit different.
A little frustrating, isn't it?
Yes.
part of the reason for the burnout or frustration, I could understand, certainly.
Yes.
So you're the president of the Medical Society, only, the second female president in the entire history?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you've got, obviously, a beautiful primary care practice here on Sullivan's Island, but... Yeah. You are not alone. You are a legacy here, third generation. Your grandfather began the practice, about 80 years ago? Is that right?
Yeah, almost 80 years ago. Yeah.
Has it always been here on Sullivan's Island?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, my grandfather's from the upstate, went to MUSC up in Chicago, and he loved Charleston. And he was actually a professor in biochemistry at the medical university and then decided to go to medical school. But he was a colonel in the Army. He was one of the first colonels in World War II of the whole European theater. And then he was in Miami for some health reasons after the war and always said he wanted to come back here. So he came back here and established this practice. And then my father joined him in the, about early 1969 or 70. And then we actually lived, my father was in the Army, a major in the Army. We ended up living in Thailand, where my father did some stuff there with the medical community. And then they came here. And I grew up here and in Atlanta, spent my summers here. And so it's a privilege and honor to be here.
At what age did you know that this was the route you wanted to take?
That's a good question, because I kind of fought with that back and forth.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought I wanted to be a physician, then I didn't want to be a physician, then I wanted to be a physician, then I didn't want to be a physician. Yeah. So I went in a weird kind of way, but I've been here now at this practice. I was down in Florida for many years and did my training there, and I've been here at this practice for 17 years.
You graduated from the Medical University of South Carolina, is that right?
Yes, I went to the Medical University, and then did my residency at University of Florida, mm-hmm. and then University of Miami, and then I own my own practice in Fort Lauderdale and Pompano, worked for hospitals back before there were any hospitalists, so that was very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's very different. And after many hurricanes, having my two kids, and there was an opening here, I decided to come back to Charleston, which it's been great. And I'm still involved with a lot of things in Florida, and I love it, but it's been an honor and a privilege to be here in the community.
You mentioned the hospitalist. Touch base for just a moment on that, because a lot of people will come to you or to their primary care doctor, and then they end up in the hospital, and they really don't have that doctor, do they?
No. Yeah, it's good and bad. So before the hospitalist kind of came out, your physician or listening myself, or especially my grandfather, my father back in the days, and even myself when I practiced, the doctor was somebody you would go to your house. So we would have house calls. You would be there. Anything happened. I mean, it was, and it still is a service, a calling, a service, you know, to help. So what we would do is we'd follow the patient in the office, and let's say you hurt your foot or whatever, needed an infection, you had to go to the hospital. Then we would take care of you in the hospital, work with the ER, follow you throughout that whole journey in the hospital, and then see you back in the office. Probably maybe about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, they started to have hospitalists because it was more difficult for different regulations, or especially for a lot of the physicians, for lifestyle practices, it was very difficult to run. Like, I used to go to three different hospitals, see everybody in my practice, run the ER, be on call, not run the ER, excuse me, but go to the ER, be on call. So it was very hard.
And raise kids and have a life, right?
Yes. But it is, and I think it's a little better now, but a few years ago it was a little bit more of a challenge before the computer system and all too, is that you would miss a little bit of things because you go to the hospital and one is a primary care physician. I did enjoy it. I got to meet a lot of my colleagues. I got to see maybe my friend, a colleague's a nephrologist, and he got to teach me things. I got to see him.
Sure.
And now I don't have that type of interaction. We have other interactions and we do communicate, but that was just different there. The other thing is that I thought it was a great, in some ways a good practice, because when you got there, your doctor knew your history. So you knew, I knew that you've, you know, maybe had 3 panic attacks and it might not be hard, or I know your family. And so you're missing a little bit of that. But I think they have some great programs now, working with the nurses, working with the home health care, now looking at hospital in the home. So there's some of that that's there. And then with telehealth, we've done a lot of great things in the home. I love doing it. I see people's cats, dogs. I can see what's going on in their background, get their medicine. So I think it's coming back around a little bit.
That's good. Well, you've always been busy, and you still are. I know you volunteer with the March of Dimes, and also Be Brave Buddies. BEE Brave Buddies. Yeah. What's that all about?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for asking me. That's a very dear thing for me. That is, Be Brave Buddies as an organization. It was started by a friend of mine. Actually, 2 friends of mine. They're physicians. Their mother is a friend of mine who had leukemia. And she was one of the first ones several years ago that got a new drug. She was on a trial, and now it's a standard drug, but she was the first one that saved her life. And she's very artistic, and she wanted to give back to others. So she makes, or our organization makes, these dolls. I wish I had one, but hopefully we can get a picture of
it.
But it's a doll, but they have the dolls without hair. They can come in, and we give the dolls to kids with cancer, and we give them throughout the United States. We've given a whole bunch to Tanzania. And we also have now a book that Rosanna Bernstein is the founder of the organization, that she paints and illustrates. And it's been a wonderful thing getting back the feedback from these kids that have had the cancer, or their families, to know that you mentioned earlier about having somebody that looks like you, and it's having a doll that could represent they're okay, and it's a squeezable doll made out of different fabrics, so they can really hold during their chemotherapy and all, and it looks like them without the hair.
Wow.
And they're called Be Brave Buddies because we have them as a superhero. That's one that's the male has like a little mask and has an S and a cape, so he's a hero. And the whole thing is, be brave, buddy, like you're a buddy, like you can be brave going through the chemo and all. So it's a wonderful organization. Thank you for asking.
Of course, we can see the passion and hear that inspiration. So as we finish up, maybe have an audience here of people. What's an inspiration for people maybe considering a career in medicine, following in your footprints, or footsteps rather?
Yeah, that's a great thing. I think one of the things good is there are many different ways to look into medicine, or different paths. Mine was a kind of different path, even though I had family history of medicine. I actually ended up majoring in cultural anthropology and French, and did some business.
Okay, that's a whole other podcast.
So that's a very different thing. I think it's very exciting. I teach a lot of the medical students. I love being passionate with them, hearing their different organizations that they've been involved with. I think also there's more people looking into maybe helping with the medical school loans. I know that's a hindrance for some people. The loans are a lot. But it's really a calling. You need to help people. A lot of the younger people, younger students, are maybe doing biomedical engineering and working with computer science, and you know, playing games. And being able to incorporate that into medicine, I think in the next few years, is so exciting. The advancement that's gonna happen with that is, I just can't wait to see what's happening. I think a lot of the struggles that the physicians, my generation and I, have done with the EMRs, the electronic medical record, in the future will be better. So if we can get these younger physicians with these different technical backgrounds that still want to serve and help people, if they can make the lives easier for the patients and the lives easier for the physicians, then we can get back to the patient-doctor relationship. So when I come in the room, I don't have to sit there and type and go through everything. They'll have AI, which maybe just go in and type up everything. Wow. So it's, I think it's exciting to see. I think a lot of the newer students that have been there have also had either their own experiences or seen things that have happened to their families, maybe a medical situation, and being able to be empathetic and bring their story to medicine, I think is going to be very big and exciting. And looking at different people, also different cultural backgrounds, different languages, work with different minority groups, I think it's very exciting. So I'm hopeful for the future.
And that was not a setup question. That was total, you know, spontaneous there. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, no doubt there are listeners and viewers who are watching and thinking, wow, I want her to be my doctor. How can anyone get a hold of you if they want to come to the practice?
Yes. Well, thank you. Yeah, we are taking new patients. I do work with Roper St. Francis Hospital. Mm-hmm. So there's a different website. We have a lot of primary care physicians. We work with the Roper St. Francis primary care physician partners. And it's a great way to get involved. I know a lot of our patients also either call one of the centers or go online and make an appointment.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Kay Durst, thank you so much for joining us on the HealthLinks podcast.
All right. Thank you very
much. Thank you for
joining. It's an honor and privilege.
Remember, our podcasts are also video-based, and so you can log in and not only hear our guests, but of course, see some of the pictures and video that go along with the subject as well. And as always, for any questions about our guest or for any comments or maybe suggestions for future podcasts, reach out to us at listen@healthlinkspodcast.com. I'm DJ Thatcher. Thank you for joining.